I actually grew up in Fleming County, born and raised in Fleming County. Graduated from high school there, and then my wife and I went to UK together and got married shortly after. And she's from Franklin County, ended up settling there in Frankfort. I farm full time, raise beef cattle there in Franklin and Shelby counties, and then also work for the Kentucky Beef Network as an area facilitator, kind of a field rep, I guess, if you will, from roughly Louisville, Lexington, Lexington, Cincinnati. That's kind of central, north central part of the state.
So you both raise beef together?
Yeah, she's an ag teacher there in Western Hills in Frankfort. So,
what are misconceptions that social media offers about livestock production that should be dispelled?
I might spin this a different way. I think for years and years we have fought against the narrative that beef is unhealthy. The product itself, beef, is not healthy for us. We fought tooth and nail that it is a health food. And for whatever reason in the last few years, and that's one of the reasons right now, the beef market is as hot as it's been ever and keeps getting hotter. Part of that is because we're short on cow numbers right now, but the big driver is demand. You know, beef is cool to eat now. Beef is seen as healthy, nutritious, and it absolutely is. So I think that for years we were fighting against that negative narrative that beef is not healthy for you. It causes cancer. It causes heart problems. And, you know, there was a push at one point in time. We were so concerned about this lab-grown meat taking over, which is absolutely terrible. I mean, it's ultra-processed food. It doesn't get any worse than that, you know. Beef is as close to as real and clean a food as you can get. You know, we've been eating it for thousands of years. And so I'm excited about that's a misconception that we have tackled and are still tackling, and I think is absolutely headed in our direction.
So, one of the things that I think is, not that I agree with everything that's come from the Baja movement, but you've come so far to the point that the director of that group would rather have French fries from tallow than from vegetable
oil. We've come a long way.
I'm not sure that I agree with them on that, but in terms of favor from being in the outhouse, now you've come to the White House.
We have.
Okay. So there are those that are out there. I'm going to push you into this.
Yeah.
There are those out there that say you pump your animals full of antibiotics. You pump them full of steroids. You sacrifice them in any way you possibly can to make a dollar.
Where does
animal health, where does animal husbandry come into the way that you raise beef today for the consumer?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that the majority, when you talk about grass-fed beef, the majority of cattle in this country, at least in the first well over half of their lifetime, are raised on beef. The mama cows are all the time raised on grass. You know what I mean? Their entire life. They are free range, if you will. It's something that we take very seriously on our operation. We maybe don't practice 100% regenerative. You know, there's folks that they move cattle three times a day. You know, they're very, very serious about it. But every cow herd that we have.
Don't be so critical about yourself on that. You know, we practice regenerative agriculture.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't move them 10 times a day and somebody else does 12.
Right.
Don't even begin to put yourself down. There's plenty of others out there ready to do that for you.
Well, we believe in soil health, grass health, animal health. Every herd of cattle that we have gets rotationally grazed. We're on grass all the time, the entire time that they're at our operation. They're never confined. You know, and from an animal health standpoint, I think that's a huge driver in health. Honestly, they're in their natural environment. I think if they've got plenty of good nutritious grass to eat, that's the best medicine you can give them. But from the animal health side of things, we do vaccinate, not to get political, but I know there's kind of a pushback now against anti-vaccinations, even on your own children, you know, but it's something that, you know, we vaccinate ourselves and our children, and we vaccinate our cattle because we think that that's absolutely what's best for them to keep them healthy. When it comes to hormones, you know, we don't implant our cattle. When it comes to antibiotics, I think it's crazy that, you know, when our little girl, Joanna, gets sick, we take her to the doctor, give her antibiotics, she gets better. Why on earth would I not do the same with my animals? They're not getting antibiotics all the time. I don't know where that misconception has come from, that they're just constantly fed antibiotics, every day, year round. That's absolutely not the case. our cattle get antibiotics if and when they get sick, and it's to help them get better, and it does work, and they do get better, you know, do it for a living. I've seen it with my own eyes. So.
But you also have a situation that if they are given antibiotics, mm-hmm. there is a period of time of waiting before they go to the market.
Yes, sir.
So you take precautions to make sure mm-hmm. that the meat from those animals is safe.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. It's usually a 21 to 30 day withdrawal period. The crazy thing about it is, unless it's an old cull cow, you know, they would go to market pretty quick. So you have to wait for that withdrawal period to, you know, end. But the bread and butter of the beef market, the beef industry are calves, our calf crop that we produce. If one of them gets sick, it could be months or years until they're processed, you know, into beef. So, those 21 day withdrawal periods are far over with by that point. You know what I mean?
Your wife would probably do better on this one, not because I don't like you, but because she's a mom.
Right.
But let me ask this, and you gave this analogy, and I was going to take you there anyway. Mm-hmm. On our farm, mm-hmm. the cows came first.
Yeah.
The hogs came first. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were sick, tough nuts, get out there. The animals came first.
Yep.
So in the structure of your family, your wife, your child, mm-hmm. and the farm, is either one sacrificed for the sake of the other?
It's a constant challenge every day, you know, because you want to be a good husband. You want to be a good dad. You want to be a good family member. But at the end of the day, you know, I think it's even spiritual. I think we're called. This is something that we're called to do, to tend to these animals, to be given dominion over them. And that's a heavy responsibility that I think some people don't think about and don't realize. But it's something that we take very, very seriously. And sometimes it does mean, I'll give you a good example. We were at a friend's house one night. They invited us over for dinner. And I took one bite, I think, out of my cheeseburger. My phone rings and somebody says, hey, you've got a cow stuck in a pond. She's got down into the mud and an old cow and can't get out. And felt terrible, but we had to jump up and leave immediately. You know what I mean? And jump in the car and run to the house and get the truck and get what we needed and go to the farm. And we're able to help her, able to save her, able to do the right thing. But it's not, you know, it's just part of the way of life that we've chosen. Is it's not 9 to 5. And I can promise you that those instances happen at the worst times, it seems like, not when you're laying on the couch with nothing else to do. So
if you'd been eating a chicken sandwich, she probably would have been stuck. You know?
Well,
she
I guess it's coming to me, right?
That was retribution. Okay, so you're an FFA?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if you're in extemporaneous public speaking or impromptu speaking or public speaking, mm-hmm. you got your speech, you know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
A discussion contest is not a public speech.
Yeah.
How do you win a discussion contest? It's not whoever yells the loudest.
Right, right.
It's not whoever has the last word.
Yep.
How do you win a discussion contest?
Yeah. I did, when I was in FFA in high school, I did extemporaneous, and it was somewhat off the cuff. You know, you didn't exactly know what you were going to get. But yeah, it's kind of unique in that it's not a speaking contest, the discussion meet. You know, it's not a scripted in any way. And that's one of probably the most difficult parts preparing for the contest is, you know, I kind of had my flow of the contest, how I kind of wanted it to go and my points and the way I thought we would go based on some of the other people on the panel. And it did not go that way at all. You know what I mean? Because you've got four people that are very intelligent, that have their own perspectives on a very complex issue coming together to form a discussion and bounce off of one another and work together and work it out. And so it's honestly a contest kind of in its own, you know.
So how much of the contest is listening mm-hmm. and analyzing what you've heard mm-hmm. as opposed to what you bring?
I think it's the majority of the contest, really, because at the end of the day, you can have your points that you're trying to get across, but man, that's a catch 22 way to operate. You know, it's probably why we are in the position that we're in as a country right now. It's everybody's trying to get their agenda across, you know? And at the end of the day, quite frankly, you'll lose the contest. If you just drop a bomb and say, pull your idea out of left field, you've got to bounce off of and work off of one another and kind of build a constructive conversation and, You know, for the most part, we kind of think on the same wavelength, and it's not, nobody was in left field or anything, but, yeah, everybody has their own opinions and their own thoughts, and you've got to build off of that and work together and come towards a, not only a solution, but an action plan on how to carry out that solution.
I wish Washington could go through that. You know, I wish we scored debate on things. Well, but you're right. You know, when you, if you expect Mr. Jeffries to come in and speak, mm-hmm. you pretty well know his platform.
Right, right.
And if you expect Mr. Johnson to come in and speak, you know his platform.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the blue dog?
Yeah.
Where's the moderate? Where's the person who listens
yeah.
and offers their idea and comes up with a point?
Yeah.
But this is also, to me, a training ground for Farm Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you guys are in the policy session,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to be my way or the highway with anyone.
Yeah.
This is the voice mm-hmm. coming together.
Mm-hmm.
The right of the minority, but the rule of the majority.
Yeah.
And then when that meeting is over, you walk out with one voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. We've lost our – Kentucky had Henry Clay, the great, great compromiser.
The great pacificator.
We've kind of lost that skill, I'm afraid.
Okay. So now back on track to the contest. What was the topic here at the state level?
It was about urban sprawl, something we've been fighting a lot in Kentucky and in the whole country, but not necessarily fighting urban sprawl, but how do we deal with urban sprawl in a responsible way, but still protect rural America. Because it's not going away. It's not going to disappear. It's here to stay. You know, you can't stop it. So how do we change it? How do we guide it?
It's kind of like managing your own farm. You
yeah.
know, you don't make a blanket decision. How do you allow the urban area to grow, but not at the expense of agriculture?
Yeah.
But in the black and white, and especially you as a young farmer and mm-hmm. you as a young farm family,
yeah.
we're losing 300 acres a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're losing 300 acres a day.
Yeah. And I thought it was unique in the contest. I didn't realize this until I was on stage, actually. We were all introducing ourselves, that all four of us, just pure coincidence, are very, very close to urban areas. You know, we've got some friends that live in basically Missouri, about as far west Kentucky as you can get. And he laughed and he said, I'm glad I didn't do this contest. I wouldn't have had a clue. I don't know what the word urban is. And the four of us, you know, we absolutely do. You know, we're 45 minutes from Louisville and Lexington. Molly was from Taylor County, but lives in Louisville. Megan is 30, 40 minutes from Louisville. Jacob's about an hour from Louisville. Yeah. So we all, and he's close to E-Town. E-Town's booming now too. So it was relevant for everybody in the contest.
Okay.
Yep.
So what else would you say about Farm Bureau? I mean, you're a young couple. You're a farming couple. You work off the farm, but you work on the farm.
Yep.
What do you see for the future and what's your message from a young farm family?
You know, I think we have a lot to glean and to learn from the older generations. I love the older generation. I respect them greatly and deeply. But at the end of the day, we gotta have new folks. You know, that's in the whole world, in the whole organization and in every business, every entity. And I've been very, very, we've even talked with some other folks this week about that, about how good of a job Farm Bureau has done in recruiting the next generation and bridging that gap and spurring it along. Cause let's not, you know, and again, I don't mean this in any negative way towards the older generations, but there's a lot of them. The average age of the farmer is what, there's different statistics, 50, 60 some years old. It's not folks our age, you know, and that's something we've got to think about, honestly, you know, really. And I think Farm Bureau's done an excellent job of that, of dealing with that issue, of helping folks like us along, giving us opportunities. And I think that would be my message. And something that I tried to speak on last night is when you talk about urban sprawl, there's a succession planning piece to that, because there's a lot of older aging farmers that would love to transition their farms along. They would hate for them to be sold into development, but there's no one to take the farm from them, whether that be they have no kids or they have no kids interested in the farm. We have to pass that torch. I was beat over the head for years about my decision to come back and farm full time. I was told you can't do it. You can't make it work. It's too hard. And we've done that in the trades. Why can't you find a plumber or an electrician right now? Cause you've discouraged that kind of work. We've got to change the narrative. We need young people to do this every day. This aging generation, we owe it to them to find people our age to transition their farms over to us. If a solar farm comes knocking on their door, I don't blame them, quite frankly, for cashing out if they have no one else to pass the farm on to, even if that's not their wish, you know, even if that's not their desire. What choice do they have? At some point, this is a hard way of life. You can't do it forever. You know, what other choice do you have other than to sell out? So we've got to find people, young, excited people to be in this business. And I do applaud Farm Bureau for trying every way they can to do that.
Now I'm going to throw you out in the deep water. I'm going to make you governor of Kentucky.
I don't know about all that.
You just got elected, okay? Now, thinking about the economy, there was a period of time that the U.S. economy was a production economy. Mm-hmm. We made things.
Right.
Coal out of the ground, crops from we made stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we become a service economy. So if I'm sitting in the governor's mansion and I'm looking at what has made Kentucky strong, mm-hmm. What are the elements that we have naturally that are our strengths? What talents, what gifts, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. What's on the positive side of the ledger? You have to say agriculture.
Yep. Yep.
If there's a hole in the boat mm-hmm. and agriculture is failing,
yep.
then what does that say about your future?
Yep.
So not only from the patriarch and the matriarch with no one to pass to.
Yep.
But I'm thinking from a government leadership standpoint
yep.
of what makes your commonwealth strong. Mm-hmm. It behooves leadership to look at stewarding the cities and allowing them to grow.
Yep.
But stewarding the farms and not sacrificing the farm
yep.
at the expense of the urban.
And it is exciting. I mean, we're in a capitalistic world. Money talks, unfortunately. But for the years, it just felt like we were on the defensive, fighting this, you know, the negative narrative on agriculture. And for whatever reason, I hate to keep going back to COVID. I feel like we hang our hat on COVID too much. But something happened where people had to go back home and sit and think for a while. And now all of a sudden, rural America has become cool. People are eating meat. They're making bread. They're homesteading. And that excites me. You know, there's so much negativity around agriculture, but I think there's a lot of positive to come because people want to know, you know, for so long, people wanted to know where their food came from, but they were looking in the wrong place. They were attacking agriculture and they were trying to go vegan and they were trying to go organic. Not that any, you know, organic food's fine.
It's a choice.
But the problem is processed food that's not actually food. And people are figuring that out now and they want real food and we're in the real food business. You know what I mean? That's exciting for us. It ought to excite us. And so hopefully we can get some, this push in the right direction. We can get some traction with some policymakers, with some lawmakers, because we just don't do a good job in this country of smart, intelligent planning. You know, we have some family that spent some time overseas in Barcelona, Spain, and in Italy. And over there, of course, that's an old civilization. They didn't have cars back then. They walk everywhere. Everything is strategically planned around efficiency, you know. We drive 45 minutes to go to the store or something like that. It's not, you know, we as a country haven't thought efficiently and effectively. How many vacant storefronts are there out there now that aren't just wasted land, you know? And so hopefully we can kind of gain some traction and start thinking about let's keep, you know, progress is fine. People got to have a place to live. They got to have a place to work. But let's keep those in urban areas. We don't need solar farms. We don't need subdivisions out in the middle of prime farmland. You know, it ought not be that way. And so hopefully we're gaining some traction and we'll get a little, make a little headway there. So.